Meg, you told me that something happened to you at the gym right as I was pushing record.
Oh my God, yeah, not related to like Mormonism at all. But I'm in
Fair.
a new school, new program. I'm back in school and I have to watch a lot of lectures. I'm in this class that's like political history up till like 1500, and it's awful. Like my brain doesn't do that stuff. So I have to watch a lot of lectures. So I was like, I'm gonna go to the gym and I'm gonna watch some lectures while I like walk on the treadmill. Two birds, one stone. First of all, it didn't like the time passed slower than I thought was humanly possible. Like I was like really trying to be invested in the lecture, and then I would like look up at like my treadmill and I had walked like for a minute and a half, and I was like, this is gonna be it's gonna take a long time. And it did. But then anyway, this so I go to this like small gym. It's not like fancy at all. And this man who was there, he was like working out, I don't know, doing the machines, doing the weights and stuff. He like came up to use the treadmill right next to me, and he saw like on my phone just like this little video of like a little old man talking. And he's like, "Oh shit, are you FaceTiming?" And I was like, "No, I'm just watching this lecture for my class." And he was like, "Oh man, I thought that was your dad. I was gonna say hi." And I was like, "Nope. I've never talked to this man before. I go to the gym, I get on my machines, like I go from one to the next, and then I leave. And I normally don't talk to anyone. So like this man to just come up and be like, "Are you FaceTiming? Oh shit, I wanted to say hi to your dad." I was like, you don't even know me. Like, why would you be saying hi to my dad?"
Why
But
would you just
also,
say hi to my dad?
yeah. I don't know. Also, I was like
That's don't
silent.
he's one of those people that get the endorphins from exercising that I just don't. I can already tell. He gets
Yeah,
those
he was
endorphins, and
like,
I'd
"I'm
be
ready
like,
to be social."
yeah,
But
I
it was
don't
weird
ever have
because
that.
I hadn't spoken like the whole entire time I was there. So like, I don't know why he thought I was on FaceTime and my dad was just lecturing me. Like he's doing all the talking and I'm just like
And
walking
you're
and
just
like
like,
sweating like on an incline, just like going. It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. It's more than a podcast. They're more than ex-Mormon. It's the More Than Mormon
Hello, everyone. Surprise, we're back. This is More Than
We're
Mormon, and I'm
back.
Lena.
And I'm Meg, and man
If
oh man,
you.
it has been many, many minutes.
Many, many moons. Many moons. Yes, several months, actually. I believe where we left off was our patriarchal blessings, which was a really heavy episode. So I am glad to come back and just bullshit for a little bit about the audacity of the Mormon Church. How have you been,
Because
Meg?
they really have it. They really have that
They
audacity.
have that goddamn audacity. Yeah, we're back. Meg's had a move. I became a cheerleader. What else happened?
We're both in
A
school and it's
meteor
kicking
hit
our
Utah.
asses. Okay.
What?
The thing about the way that I get my news is I don't. The only like
I
newest
don't get my
information
news.
the only news information I get is from like the Apple News notifications that will like pop up with the headlines. I
Yep.
read the headlines and then I'm like, "Dear God." And the headline is too much for me to like click on it, so I just
Accurate.
continue with
I
my
believe the
day.
last time I like legitimately was paying attention to the news was monkeypox. I was like, you know what? I don't need this in my life.
Similar to the news, I just don't keep track of like what month it is, what year it is. Just living my
No.
life.
Yes, living life. At this point, I feel like I am surviving, not thriving. I don't think you can really feel like you're doing both at the same time, you know? Because if you're thriving, you're not focusing on just like surviving. And when you're surviving, Lord fucking knows you are not thriving. So that's me in a nutshell. As you can tell, I went crazy and dyed my hair a different color since the last time everyone has seen me.
Looks
But
great.
we're all good. We're all good. We are currently sitting on my queen mattress in the living room because this is where it is coolest. And we also had like a snuggle puddle, and we're too lazy to bring the mattress back upstairs. And then when I tried to turn my desk around to film the podcast, I realized I could not find the connector for my mic because it's like a USB to like a C port anyway. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to go through the effort of turning my desk around if I can't use like my nice stuff. I'm going to sit on that fucking mattress. Hell yes, I have my candy ropes, my sweetheart candy ropes. I'm ready to bullshit. I'm ready to bullshit. All right.
Let's jump into it. Let's talk about something shitty that the Mormon Church has been up to, which is a lot, because I think since we recorded,
Where should I start?
there's been at least one, maybe two general conferences. There was this whole new recent thing about, missions really, really becoming mandatory, especially for young men. There's been a lot of things. Oh, the article that came out about sexual misconduct in the church. There's been a lot of things. So I guess like if you're listening to this, maybe like leave a comment on whatever you're listening on, or like DM us on Instagram and let us know like of Mormon news that we have missed in the last month, like what you would like us to talk about, because there's a lot. And Lena and I like have also been really busy, so like we could just chat with each other and not talk about
A
being
thousand
ex-Mormon.
percent.
Like we could just
And the
chat,
thing
but
is, we want to get back into recording, but because we've missed so much and we're kind of like starting from scratch almost again, I think we're going to need some help figuring out some fun topics to discuss. So, I know the first thing that we should talk about is Joseph Smith's picture, which was released. So it's August right now, so a month or two ago,
Pretty recently.
fairly recently. And personally, I actually think it's kind of cool just because it's like historical. Like, hey, look at what we found. Yay. Awesome. Cool. Okay. But I know a lot of people are kind of having some heydays over it, arguing whether or not it's actually Joseph Smith or whether it's Hiram Smith. And I'm like, y'all,
They were
it's
brothers,
a dead
so
guy. Yeah, and they looked
either way,
alike. So,
like the genetics would be similar, like
like at the end of the day, doesn't really matter, not to me, but like, yay. What do you think about it?
I think what's really concerning about it is, and I would say like even before this photograph was like found and released and whatever, I was always really concerned that like the image, the mental image I had in my head of Joseph Smith was either the actor that played him in like the restoration videos, or like the little oil painting version of him as like a 14-year-old like kneeling in the grove. And I didn't have like a real concrete like depiction in my head of like who Joseph Smith was, like what he looked like. Like, was he attractive? Like, was he, did he look intimidating? Did he look friendly? Like, I didn't know any. Like, and I didn't even think about it because I just pictured the
And to
actor.
me, the guy who plays him in the restoration is attractive. Like, I think he's handsome.
Yeah, I think he's
He's not
hired for a
bad to look at.
reason.
Exactly. And the face mask of Joseph, not to like body shame or anything, but it didn't give me like the charismatic, handsome, narcissist type of personality that I imagine Joseph Smith likely had to be able to do everything that
I
he
had
had
to look
done.
it up.
And
Yeah, well,
so
and I
when I
think
saw
like
that picture, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Like, he looks handsome and charismatic and kind of like stocky and strong. And you're like, ooh, snap. To me, it was almost like icing on the cake, almost of like, if this is really what he looked like, if this really is Joseph Smith, like everything else I know about him, especially when I just look at it in retrospect to my own experiences with other men. Sorry, man, you fucking suck. Sorry, not sorry. He matches like exactly what I envision, again, like that narcissist, charismatic, coercive type of person.
Yeah, and I think it also shows him in a more like human form, as opposed to like the
Yes.
paintings and like in the
Yes.
films that are obviously like they're wearing makeup and there's beautiful lighting, like
It's
those
like
kinds of
going
things.
from
Like,
like the Disney movie like cartoon to like the live action and having a completely different like perspective of the story,
right. Which,
if
if
I'm
you think
picking up
about
what you're putting
like,
down.
So like in The Lion King, right? The
I
bad
love that we're
guys
talking
are
about Disney now.
this
So
is
we're
it popped into my
the
head when you
Lion
said this. So in The Lion King, we've Scar, he's like the bad guy. But he it also, I would say, is like charismatic, as Disney villains are, like, right? Like they have personality, they have character. But then if you when you watch like the live action Lion King, which I don't recommend because it's shitty, but like, and it's a lion, it's a lot scarier to be face to face with a lion as opposed to a cartoon version of a lion. And I think that like seeing this image of potentially Joseph Smith, I don't know, it makes him scarier to me. Like it makes it seem like he was real. Like he was real, but it makes him
But I know what you mean. It adds to it. It does make it more real. It makes it more palpable. Because we've been lied to about everything. And it's almost to a point, like this is going to sound really weird to anybody who doesn't know me like Meg does, but like it's almost to a point where like I can convince myself that Joseph Smith didn't even exist. That all of it is just a bunch of bullshit, right? Like
Yes,
put it
yeah,
out of my
exactly.
head, none of it even existed. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And then when that picture comes up, you're like, this man actually did that. This man actually married a 14-year-old girl. This man is
Right.
real. Like, holy
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah, and
I
the I
agree.
think about like the pioneers like traveling, like the hundreds of thousands or whatever of pioneers that like traveled to Utah and beyond at like, and that was after he died. So I think about like all of those people who went through something that like, and it's kind of fun to joke about with like Trek and like the pioneers and how much like Mormons love pioneer culture, but it is their ancestors. Like it is, real people, real lives, many of like
That
hundreds
went
of
through
thousands of them.
horrendous.
Yeah, people that died needlessly, people that traveled, left their family needlessly, like all of this stuff, like to move to Utah, where
Suffered
like,
and gave up everything for a lie.
yeah, and for
For a
this
man
man,
that some of them probably never met or never laid eyes on.
yeah, I would say most of
Most
them,
of them, honestly.
yeah, and now
Oh, God!
has perpetuated this
Oh, that like is making me so
church.
feel so creepy because you're right.
It's scary.
Oh my God, it's like if we were to like this, my brain is going someplace wild. If we were to just like show up and like see Warren Jeffs in jail.
Oof.
You know, like
Oof.
that guy exists.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just a few hundred miles away, if I believe to be correct about where he's incarcerated, like from me, like I could probably drive to the compound and make it there in a couple of hours. Like that is real, that exists. And when you're inside your little Mormon happy bubble, like of course it's real and it exists, but it's happy. And then when you're outside of the happy Mormon bubble, you're like, oh God, this isn't just something that someone made up. He's real. A
Yeah.
man like that exists. Men like
Yeah.
that exist.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And it's like I think a large thing in the Mormon, not just in the Mormon Church, but I think in religion, especially high demand religions, is sort of just like blind obedience, right? Sort of like you were saying, like this idea that, either we have an answer or we don't have an answer, but we don't need to worry about it. And like either way, it's like when you get like one of those teen magazines that has like the quizzes, and you like start at one place, and then it's like, do you do this? It's like yes or no, but it's like no matter what happens in the middle, like you wind up at the same place. So it's just like do what we tell you to do. And so I think within Mormonism, like if we were still active Mormons, like active believing Mormons, I think that seeing this photograph and being like, oh, like this is most likely like a picture of Joseph Smith or potentially Hiram Smith, either way, still cool. Like, and now we have this, and like our role as Mormons is to like see it and like appreciate it and just like accept it into like our world, like our realm of like Mormon doctrine, Mormon truth, and to just like take it and accept it, which is wild to me because seeing it as an ex-Mormon, it's like the same thing, but now I have to like take all of this weird like anger and sadness and frustration and confusion and fear and like reworkshop it to like bring this face, like this image into it. And I think it would be so much easier to be like, wow, this is just a really cool, you know, photograph of Joseph Smith. But at the same time, you know, even as an active believing Mormon, I had a depiction of Joseph Smith in my head. And I think seeing this photograph like would have potentially like, thrown me off. And I think it has thrown off some active Mormons. And I think especially because of how old he looks and because there we also have, you know, I don't know, like digitized images of like Helen Mar Kimball, like those kinds of things. Like we can see
when they put them side by side. We'll insert a picture because I'm sure all of you have seen it. But by any chance that you haven't, it really does. Yes, fucking, it's terrifying. Like I'm sorry, that's gross. It's so crazy that you say this because I didn't even think of it. Like it crossed my mind, but I don't think I've actually internalized what seeing that photograph did to me. Cause I remember Isaac was like, have you seen this? And I was like, and then instantly I like disassociated and I was like, oh, that's cool. History. Moving on. Mm-hmm. Cause my body was like, I'm not ready right now. So the fact that you say that, I'm like, oh, fuck me, man. I think you might be right. Because, yeah, it does. It really does bring it to life. I mean, on the flip side, it's just like going to see your favorite band in concert and seeing them right in front of you. And you're like, oh, my gosh, like they are real human beings. This is amazing. And then to see someone who looks so like stern and old next to Helen Mar Kimball, and like all of the depictions we have make him look innocent and make him look little, like not physically, but just like in a gentle type of demeanor, like a docile kind of thing, you know, especially when we talk about like 14-year-old Joseph kneeling. Like, to me, like, I think about my nieces and nephews, like, saying a prayer. And I'm like, super, that's, like, so sweet and innocent, you know? And then we have this depiction of, like, this man who, I mean, at this point, like, around our age, you know, I'm going to be 30 at the end of the year. So, oh, God. Ew, Mormon Church. He's a rough 30. Ew, shame on you. How long have you had this fucking picture? So how long have you had this fucking picture?
That's the other thing, is I think that there's a general belief in the Mormon Church, sort of like a cultural belief, not necessarily like a doctoral belief, that like we are piecing together our own history. Like as the Restoration unfolds, we're like uncovering more about the beginnings of the church. But in actuality, like things are very well documented.
They're just starting to...
There is
They're
a
just
lot
starting
of
to release it,
yeah,
because we're figuring it out faster than they can.
Yeah,
that's why I'm pretty sure that picture has been. Why wouldn't it? They have worshipped this man.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they have every single?
Think about all the times you see images of like President Nelson, right? Like you get the ensign and there's a picture of all the prophets and apostles, all their pictures. You can know what they look like and know their names, and little kids can like memorize who is who. And like every ensign that you
get. I saw a picture the other day of a baby in a crib, and eye level was the picture of the first presidency on the wall.
But we believe in agency. We don't indoctrinate our children. But you're totally right.
Like, we have Jesus. I mean, look at how we have depicted Jesus in modern Christendom.
And I think it's similar. I think when we see, like, images of, like, white Jesus, he looks innocent. Like, he has very soft features. But, like, imagine a man in his 30s walking around in the desert. Like, he was probably dirty. Like, probably wrinkly.
Yes.
Probably sunburned. Also, he's not white. But
yes.
Like, you know, like, but we...
Not white.
We craft this image of, like, Jesus, Joseph Smith, you know, whoever. Even the prophets, like, they have teams of people who, like, dress them and make them ready to appear places. I can tell you that Dieter F. Uptorf wears makeup because...
Look at me right now. I don't look like this.
Right, exactly. And that's...
I did not wake up looking like this, y'all.
And that's
than Joseph.
He definitely did it. But like,
he's in the bathroom, like doing his hair,
trying to figure out how to dye it purple.
Me, a couple nights ago at 11 o'clock at night.
So, like, anyway. You know, anyway. The church, like, they craft and they sell, like, the image that they want to. And so I think with, like, the release of an image like this, it's like, oh, like we're saying, like, there are images of the prophets and apostles everywhere in the church. They want people to know them. So why do they not want people, or supposedly did they not want people, because now they do, not want people to have this image? And I think it's because it is
And not- why right now?
Yeah, it is not, it doesn't align.
Like, is there other shit that is about to come?
Oh my God. They're like, well, because I feel like we have.
They're like, okay, prepare.
We have images, pretty clear images of what, like, Brigham Young looked like. And we have really clear images of, like.
All the prophets.
Yeah, all the prophets since then. And so.
Emma Smith.
We know, yeah.
We know what Emma Smith has looked like originally.
Oh my God.
Haven't we for quite a while? Like, we've seen, like, an older photo of her for a, like, we've had access to that photo.
Yes.
Do I remember this correctly, that the church got this picture from the RLDS church?
Again, didn't read the
article. Do I remember that correctly? I'm going to look into that because because that would make sense, because that's kind of like where Emma branched off, right?
Yes.
So it's like, how long ago was this picture given to or shared with? I don't know. But you're totally right, because, like, Emma Smith, all the other prophets, even right now, we have a very good idea of what they look like. Even their paintings are a lot closer to what their faces have actually looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just thinking of, like, Lorenzo Snow and Brigham Young. Motherfucker.
A great-great-grandson of Smith, who was 79, currently his great-great-grandson is 79 years old.
Wow.
He discovered the home, and he's part of the... Him or his family... is or was part of the RLDS church.
Fascinating. Okay.
So, yeah, passed down through his family, which, like, was split between the LDS and the RLDS. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What I'm
definitely interested... I was just going to say, I'm just interested what everyone else kind of thinks about this, because I really did not internalize that until this conversation. So I'm just wondering if anybody else had a similar experience to you. I feel like a lot of us probably did, because having your like, to me right now, truth equals perception.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is what is inside here.
Yeah.
That's it. You know? Everything else, you know, so, like, how I perceive things is gonna be true for me. Like, right now, my cat is walking in front of me. You can't see it. You just have to kind of take my word for it. And I believe that's true because I see him with my own two eyes. So it's like my perception of the Mormon church, what it was before I joined, what it was while I was in, and what it is now, it's morphed completely. And it's still changing. It's still morphing. And it's unpleasant.
Yeah.
It's like every time I think I've, like, made it to a point where I can, like, breathe, I have to, like, redirect and correct myself.
You
know what I mean?
I will say that, like, recently, I agree with that. Yeah. I think recently, because, like, we haven't been doing the podcast, I haven't really been paying attention to any news, but most especially, like, Mormon news. Like, I really only see things that, like, people share on Instagram, or, like, on Facebook, like, things will pop up, but I don't, like, read, you know, I'm not, like, blogging on to, like, Deseret News or whatever. So I feel like I've been in a place where my attitude towards the church, the church as a whole, is still very much, like, there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of, like, guilt and frustration and sadness. But I think, like, overall, my attitude is just, like, oh, I just, like, you know, I have all these friends that are Mormon and I love them and I, like, wish for them that they could, like, in whatever way they need to, that they could feel and experience, like, freedom and joy and happiness and love and acceptance. And if they're in the Mormon church, then, like, I hope that they find it in the Mormon church. And if they're capable of it, if it's possible for them, like, I hope that they leave the Mormon church and, like, then find it. And I think that that's, you know, for me, been, like, a really healthy attitude to have, because otherwise I just, like, am, like, dwelling on how much I hate the Mormon church all the time.
Totally.
But then it's, like, you know, it's always something. Like, it's always, like, we turn a corner and something happens. Like, the thing about missions being mandatory, this photograph, like, the sexual misconduct situation, which I feel like we need to dedicate, like, more time and research to that topic. But, you know, these things happen and it's, like, shit, I really, really love my friends that are Mormon, and I really, really wish that they weren't. And I know that that's how people felt about me when I was Mormon. And I know that, like, I know that I have friends that are Mormon and feel that way about me now. Like, they just really, really wish I wasn't where I'm at. And I think, like, you know, wishing for other people to believe the same way you do is just, it's tiring. It's exhausting. Like, emotionally, it is exhausting to just, like, be concerned for your friends and the people you love, like,
all the time.
All the time. And to, like, there are moments where I, like, let that guard down. And I'm like, you know what? Like, this friend in particular, they seem to be doing really well. Like, they seem to be successful. They seem to be happy. And, like, that's what I want for them. But then, like, something else happens. I'm like, but also, yes, they're successful and yes, they're happy, but they're also, like, being manipulated and they're also, like, living this lie and wasting their time, wasting their lives, like, believing in these things that are just, like, complete bullshit. And I think it goes back to, like, you know, the truth that we believe is the truth that's around us. And, you know, ignorance is bliss in a way that I also have friends that are sort of torn and on the fence and, like, sort of, you know, their shelves are breaking and they're not happy because they don't know what's true. And I think it's that in-between spot that's really where people are miserable. Because I know really happy Mormons and I know really happy ex-Mormons, but it's, like, everyone going through that, like, middle spot where it's, like, their sense of what is true is so altered that it's impossible to, like, find peace. You, like, really have to go. Like,
oh, totally. Well, and that's the thing about Mormonism, too, is, like, it really does kind of require you to be all in. And I remember a point, especially early on when I first joined the church, when everything was, like, super new and exciting, I was all in. I was occupied every moment of the day, whether it was praying and reading scriptures or going out on visits with the missionaries. I was always doing something. I was at FHE. I was at game nights. I was making plans with friends for the weekend. And then it would start all over again at church on Sunday. When you take the sacrament, you have your moment, and, it, you know, and confirmation bias takes a toll on you, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was really happy. Like, I remember people telling me, like, wow, like, I don't really get it, but you seem really happy. And what happened is I filled the void of me healing from an abusive relationship with an abusive institution. And when you leave the church, it is very similar to what it's like to be having a friend or a family member, someone you love a lot, be in an abusive relationship. And you see that in between where you know they aren't really happy, but they don't know how to get out.
Yeah.
And then the in between is like when they maybe leave for the first time or the last time or whatever, when they start to question, when they start to doubt, then it's another in between of like, well, I kind of miss this. I miss the community. I miss the friendship. I miss having things to do on the weekend. You know, I miss his kisses. You know, there was always something that he did that was good, because when it was good, it was really good. And, you know, so like to me, like I look at the church and I look at my experience being in an abusive relationship, and they felt exactly the same. And they started exactly the same. I was love bombed. And then it got to the point where every part of my life required the church in some shape or form. And it took me a really long time to kind of like get on my feet, so to speak, after leaving the church and this abusive relationship, to kind of figure out like, what is it that actually makes me happy? What is it that actually makes me want to be a better person? Is it God? Is it this person? Whatever it may be. And so I really am trying to like focus in on, to me, the truth that everyone who remains in the church is a victim. And I don't want to say that their happiness and joy isn't real, because I know that at one point, the happiness and joy I was experiencing as a missionary, even throughout my membership, was real. There were moments that I legitimately was happy, and I kind of look back wistfully, right? But I also see how a lot of it was like molded to my liking, so I was kind of like put in a position to feel that way from the get-go.
Oh,
And
totally.
so I hope that if people are kind of in that in between, I want them to get out. I want them to get out, because the in between, once you're in that in between, I don't. It's just like when you think you're going to break up with that abusive ex and you don't, or maybe leave and come back a couple days later, like it just gets worse after that. So when, you know, maybe you've been introduced to a little bit of things that are starting to break your shelf, but you decide you want to stay in for whatever reason, whether it be school, boyfriend, girlfriend, fiance, spouse, family members, whatever. Once you know all this stuff, you can't go back and be happy in the same way you were. And then happiness doesn't exist in that in between. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I think
So I'm just like, y'all are victims, you know?
I think
You don't even know.
people who leave the church and then go back to the church are not like, I don't mean, when I say this, I don't mean like them as people, but they're like so much worse than people who never left. I don't mean like they're worse people. I just mean like it is a worse situation, I think, spiritually, mentally, to have with you like,
It's harder.
I can't, you know, it's funny. So the other day, I promise this is relevant, but we had like, I had dinner with like two friends, and we were here, and we like all sat down at our like dining room table, which we don't like do all the time. And we're like, oh, should we like say grace? Like, you know, whatever. And I was like, I could pray in Spanish because like I can. And they're like, yeah, say a prayer in Spanish. So it was wild, because I was like, I don't want to pray. I don't want to say like, dear Heavenly Father, like, you know, like I wanted to like pray in a way that was like meaningful to me in the moment. And so I was just like, you know, to the angels and the heavens, like whoever is listening, like, you know, just like bless our evening together, and like thanks for my friends, like the love that we have here, like, you know, whatever. But I was praying in Spanish. And as soon as I started praying in Spanish, it's like all those, you know, phrases, all those like prayer things that you say are like coming back. And at the end of the prayer, I like did say like, in the name of Jesus Christ, amen. 'Cause I was like, I literally don't know how else to end a prayer, which is insane, because I was raised Christian. Like I prayed my entire life, like before I joined the Mormon church. And when I, even when I was investigating the church, like the way I prayed was so different from how it was maybe like a month or two after I had like joined the church. Like in that short amount of time, like the way that I prayed had like changed so much that now I think if I went back to like a Mormon church, like if this Sunday I was just like, you know what? Like I just like would like to meet some new people. Like I still am like new to this city, and like I love hymns, I love singing, and I was just like, I'm just gonna go to a sacrament meeting and like, you know, whatever. If I went and they were like, hey, can you say the prayer? Hey, could you give a talk? Hey, could you bear your testimony? Like I could do it, like no problem. And I think that like knowing that reinforces how bullshit it is. Like how complete bullshit it is, because not only could I do it, like I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. And I think when you're Mormon, you feel bad about everything. Everything you do, even when you spend hours writing a talk and give your talk and feel the spirit move you as you talk, even afterwards, you'll be like, oh, maybe I should have said that. Or like, oh, I hope that I like, you know, did I prepare enough? Did I pray enough? Did I really say what like God wanted me to say? Where like, when it's just become this habit, when it's just like become a thing that you have done and did or do or whatever, that like, I could give a talk on any Mormon subject because I know how to bullshit any Mormon doctrine, which I learned on my mission and was reinforced after my mission with like different callings and such. That I think if I were to go back to the Mormon church sincerely, like if I went and I was like, you know what? I really did miss this. Like maybe I should give this a second chance. I don't know how I would remedy that, you know? Because even if I was like, oh, I don't know that I could convince myself that I was feeling the spirit as opposed to like knowing how to explain what the spirit feels like. Do you know what, does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yes. I couldn't go back sincerely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I could try to go back sincerely.
Trying to shove poop back up your asshole, you know, like it doesn't work that way.
That we did not need, but it gets the point across.
It gets the point across.
So that's why I wonder.
You know, I could have gone elsewhere. Could have made an XXX, but I decided not to.
We appreciate that.
You are sincerely welcome.
I know that required a lot of restraint on your end. But so that's like when I say like that people who leave the church and then go back to the church are like worse off. It's just because I can't imagine how they are in their head managing what they believe with what they used to believe, with what they used to believe before they used to believe that, like how it all comes together, other than just telling yourself, well, I was completely deceived by Satan and all those things that I felt were wrong, which again becomes difficult because so much of like knowing the church is true is based on how you feel. And I think that that yes. remains true. Like even when you leave the church, I think for me, I was really motivated to learn things about church history because of things that I felt about how I was being treated and how other people around me were being treated. And then I learned things about the church right. and then I felt, you know, angry and frustrated and scared and sad about like what I learned. So like to say, well, you know, if you read this and you pray about this and you feel good, then it's true, becomes really complicated when you've also read other things and you've also had powerful feelings and they contradict each other.
Yep. Yep. I totally get it. And I agree with you. I don't know how you can remedy that on the inside. And I think the only way would be living in a very unhealthy cycle. I can't, lying to yourself like that or trying to convince yourself that it is Satan or, you know, like, we need to have a whole entire discussion on the concept of Satan because it, at the end of the day, I'm just like, none of it makes any sense. I can't believe for one second I sat there and thought, okay, yeah, totally makes sense. Awesome. Here for it. I can't believe I ever did that now that I've like deconstructed and like processed like every single piece of like the whole entire story. And like, I feel that way now. Like I could never sincerely go back. I could never, like I've had, you know, you could give me all the money in the world. I couldn't do it. I could not trick myself into believing the church was
true. But
you
could bullshit it.
I could not trick myself.
You could lie.
But I could fucking bullshit yeah. it. I could bullshit it without a second thought. I could look at you. I can pull the tears. I could make the spirit come in and envelop you because they told us exactly how to do that as missionaries. And you don't have to be a missionary to learn how to do that. You just have to be a member of the church. You just have to be a kid in primary with your parent whispering in your ear, or your primary teacher, like you say, I know the church is true. I love my friends and family. I know Joseph Smith was a prophet in the name of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And what little kid in a little kid voice saying that, like whose heart doesn't fucking melt to a puddle on the ground floor? They're Ooh, boy, do they be using children as coercion. Ooh, I don't like that realization that's just like coming up into my head right now. We'll cover that topic another
I
time.
always think about how so I attended a YSA for the majority of my time in the church, like whether it was in Wisconsin or in school, like YSA. Pretty much the only times in my life I wasn't in a YSA was like on my mission. Literally, that's the only time. And then like a couple times I'd go to like my home ward. But the thing about being in a YSA is there's not children unless there are adults, well, not adults because you're all adults, but there are like people with callings to serve in the YSA, and those people have children, right? So I think about how when I first started going to the YSA that you know, the oh my God, what's he called? President of the YSA has was like seven children now, eight maybe, like I have no idea, like a lot.
They're all so grown up now, but yeah, and they were
They were
really
little.
little
They
at the
were
time
little.
too.
They
All of
were
them were
little, and
little.
they were like smattered throughout the pews sitting with these like YSAs. And then there's talks about like getting married, having children, and who's sitting next to you, just like a little blue-eyed, blonde-haired, a little boy with the shoes on the wrong feet. And it's like, oh yeah, like I want that. Like in no world currently do I want to get
And
six kids ready
this
for church
couple, hell no.
every
And
Sunday.
this couple, I look back and I remember like feeling the spirit in their home and thinking, this is
So
what
they're
I want.
wonderful
I
people,
want a
and they're a
family
wonderful
exactly
family.
like them. They are amazing. And that I wanted to be like them because they are a wonderful family. But the church really likes to find these specific type of families and put them in these callings like that to where it makes everyone else, get the feels and, remember that the goal is eternal family and that, that the mother is exhausted taking six, seven, eight, nine, 10 kids. Like, I don't know how many kids they have now to church and, hours and hours with a husband who not only works a crap ton, but is also a president of a YSA branch that is struggling to its core, like literally every branch warden stake across the fucking country and across the fucking world. And I'm like, I don't want a family like that. I don't want to be by myself wrangling six, seven, eight, nine, 10 children while my husband is away taking care of other people's
Well, even
children.
if your husband's there, two people to eight kids is still too many. Like the proportions are still off.
Oh, fuck no. My husband and I watched my niece and nephew a couple weeks ago, and we were literally 1-to-1 ratio, right? It was four of us. We were exhausted at the end of the day, and they're good kids. They're not toddlers. My nephew's turning 11. My niece is turning 6. Like, they're grown up enough, and we were fucking exhausted. I cannot imagine. But again, that's like the circling the wagon. Once you're married and you have kids, and you're like, okay, well, this is the best way to raise my family, it gets even harder. So it's like, God damn it, I'm so glad we left without bringing babies into this world. Because I cannot imagine being in that in between and then figuring out how you're going to raise your children now. Because I have friends that were maybe like in the in between or all the way out while their children were getting baptized. And describing their pain to me is something I can commiserate with watching my nieces and nephews getting baptized now. Versus when I was active and freshly married, watching them get blessed or baptized was like, and now I'm just like, oh, fuck! Like, stop it! Just stop! They're not choosing this.
Even
They're not. And you didn't choose this
I even
either.
feel that way about I mean, it's not the exactly the same, but like a lot of my companions for my mission and friends for my mission like have kids now, and some of them have multiple kids. And like watching them post about them, and like roommates, I've had like a lot of my Mormon friends have kids. I think watching them like post about how much they like love and adore their kids, and then simultaneously watching them post about how they are just like fully indoctrinating their kids to like be stuck in Mormonism forever. It's difficult because it's almost like it's kind of like when you're in the church, I think there's this attitude of like, oh, well, if we could, like, they're kind of on the edge, but if we could just get them married, like, you know, then they would stay. Or if they're married, it's like, if they just had a kid, like, I think that that would, you know what I mean? Like, it's like when people have a kid to save a marriage, but instead it's like, have a kid to like keep you in the church. I think.
How often were you encouraged as a missionary to like tell a couple to get married so they could continue to live together?
100% of the time, because you have to be married to be baptized, and the goal of missions is to baptize people. So like, yeah. And I think, I think it's just weird to like, again, see these like milestones where previously it was like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe that kid is 8. Like, I can't believe they're already getting baptized. Like, I'm so excited for the family. And now it's like, oh wow, that kid's already being baptized. And I feel like he was just born like yesterday. And I think it's.
I feel like he just learned how to tie his shoes, but all right.
It's.
Making eternal covenants.
No biggie.
At 8 years old.
But I guess if people can get married at 14, then like, yeah, they should start practicing at 8 to like get into
things. Touche.
No, nothing.
Touche. You know what? That makes sense. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Shit. That is a good time to be in Mormonism and learn everything you need to know before you get married and start popping out the babies.
So like, this is weird to think about too, is the amount of like lessons you have to teach, the amount of lessons that you have to teach like an adult in, or like an investigator, right, is like a lot. Like, technically you're supposed to teach them all the commandments. Like, I mean, in the commandments section of Preach My Gospel, it's like, it's everything. It's like, follow the prophet, like the 10 commandments. And on top of the 10 commandments, there's like tithing and the word of wisdom and the law of chastity and like going to the temple and like the sacrament and like all the Sabbath day. Like, there's a lot that goes into it, right? And then you also teach like a brief bit about like temples and what goes on in temples, like baptisms for the dead. Like, that's a lot of information to put on someone before they get baptized. It's not like conclusive. It does not contain everything about Mormonism that someone should know before they get baptized, but it's still a lot.
It's just like the basic rundown. It's just like the
literally bullet points. But then with children,
just literally just like a little outline.
With children who are making like the same covenant, right? Like, it's the same ordinance. They get an even more like simplified version of that. And then at the same time, we're like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of them for like, you know, choosing to like be baptized, choosing to do this. But like, do they really like, do they have a copy of Preach My Gospel that they like printed out on their walls? So, like, every morning when they're brushing their little teeth to a little toothbrush song, they're like, okay, I have to keep all these fucking commandments today. Like, no, they don't. Like, the commandments that kids understand is like, be honest, be kind, like, you know, don't shop on Sundays, like, you know, those kinds of things. And then as you get older, it like becomes more complicated, becomes more difficult to keep those commandments, right? Because a lot of them are like normal, natural, just like things that people want to do, or they are like inconsequential, like not drinking coffee, right? You go to the mall with your friends and you're 15 and everybody's getting Starbucks. It's like, wait, why can't I have coffee? And you don't know, because you probably asked that question when you were 8, like, got some bullshit kid version of that answer that like, just, you know, like, Mormonism does not prepare its members. It doesn't prepare its like converts to be knowledgeable members of the church. And even less than that, like, it doesn't prepare children to be knowledgeable members of the church. Because if you give people information, you give people power. And that includes children. Children are capable of understanding a lot. And I think if children were given more information, like, then it, even as children, like, they would have more power over their decisions, or at least more understanding of what they're going to do. And children are so like marginalized as it is, because they don't have resources and they don't even know what resources are, and they don't know how to get resources because they're children. And so like, it's just frustrating to think about, you know, literally adults whispering in children's ear, telling them like what to say, what they believe, before they've had a minute to even understand what they're supposed to believe, or to figure out if they believe it at all.
Yep. I would love to see someone in my family tell their kid, you can make a decision when you would like to be baptized. You want to be baptized at 8? Great. We're not going to throw you a party. We're not going to do anything big. You go underwater, you come back up, you get your confirmation, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get baptized at 25, great. We're not going to throw you a party. You go underwater, you get baptized, you get confirmed, and it's done. When you're 8, and all of your little friends, especially any of them with like the same birthday as you, you know, in big wards, but they have like these group baptisms.
Mm-hmm.
You want a new dress or a new suit. Like, you want a couple like gifts from Deseret. You want a
banner that says,
you want to be special, great. Just like all the other kids. It is great. Like, you want a CTR ring. Like, you want it just like everybody else. And then, not only that, but you're also raised to believe that this is what you do, and these are the steps you take, and like this is
right,
what
how
you
many
doing.
7-year-old Mormons so between those are two like, things, I can't wait until I turn 8 and I can be baptized. They're not like, oh,
they don't give a shit about.
Yeah, they're
that.
Not like, oh, I can't wait until I can like make this eternal covenant. Like, they're just like, I can't wait until I can be baptized. Like, and their understanding of what that means is so minimal and so simplified, and it's not simplified. Oh, because they're children and they don't understand. It's simplified because, like, oh, if we give them all the information, it's scary and overwhelming and confusing and doesn't make sense. And who's going to want to do it? Even an 8-year-old isn't going to want to do it. Converts that are adults don't want to do it. They get all the information. And because that's the thing is people talk about, like, oh my God, this just fueled my hate fire. So people talk about, like, leading up to a baptism, like, oh, Satan is going to, like, throw all these different things your way, and your car's going to break down on the way to the baptism, and your boyfriend's going to dump you, and you're going to be like, oh, why are all these bad things happening when I'm doing the right thing, and that's just Satan? Or you're going to start having all these really big questions, and you're not going to know how to answer them, but that's just Satan. But it's like, in reality, life just gets more complicated, and also Mormonism gets more complicated. And so people that are like, I have no idea why we taught this person all these lessons and suddenly they don't want to be baptized anymore, because you taught them all the lessons and they have been given not even all the information. They've been given this little sliver of information and they're like, you know what? That's a lot to ask. That's really confusing. I'm not sure that I'm ready to commit to that. And instead of being like,
and they're asking you to commit to it within the first couple of times they're meeting.
Yeah.
And you're like.
And rather than being like, that's understandable. Like, this is a lot. Like, we're happy to meet with you for as long as it takes. Like, answer any questions. They're like, well, we'll meet with you a few more times. But then you're not progressing. So we have to move on. We can't spend our time on you. Like, some missionaries will knock on your door in a year or two and, like, try again. But, like, you're not progressing. In this church that is supposedly, like, infinitely like merciful and loving and accepting, if someone doesn't agree to be baptized in what, like 3 to 6 months,
one of the last things they are is patient.
Yeah, exactly. If someone isn't like actively on a baptismal date, which if you're listening and you haven't served a mission, and I'm sure it like has changed even since we served missions, but like you talk about as like all the missionaries around you will have, not just like you gossip about it, like you literally have meetings and you are supposed to talk about how many people you're teaching, how many people you have like on date that have like agreed to be baptized on a specific date. Like you talk about like how many people you have on like every step of the process, and you like basically meet together and are like, okay, we have this guy, he's going to be baptized on March 17th. But he's really struggling with like quitting smoking. Then your whole little district of missionaries will be like, oh, well, you could try teaching him this lesson, or we could try inviting this member who you had to give up smoking. And you come up with a plan to like specifically target this one person to like make sure that they meet their baptismal date, instead of being like, you know what? 2 weeks is a ridiculously slow, like low amount of time for someone to like quit smoking when they've been smoking for 40 years. Like, maybe we could just, like, push that baptism date back and, like, give them some more time, give them some more leeway. No. No. It is, like, even when you push a baptism date back,
and if
back,
they think
like
that added pressure of getting the baptism date is going to help with the quitting smoking, you're fucking wrong.
Right. Just
that's not
going to
help. And all the shame around it is going to make it worse. They're going to smoke.
And then you lose investigators. You go and you're like, hey, like what happened? Like you haven't been answering calls, you haven't been, you know, and they're like, oh, well, I started smoking again, and, you know, my husband told me, you know, like, the missionaries weren't going to like that, and, you know, and so then, you know, but my friend from this other church was like, you know, she invited me, and I really had a good time there.
You don't have to quit smoking to come over.
Like, literally, yeah, if you can go to a different church and feel better about yourself and not feel like a piece of shit that has to change everything about you, like, obviously you're going to go there.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Exactly. And then missionaries are like, man, Satan's working
really hard.
It's like, no, you're working really hard to make people feel unloved.
You're working really fucking hard.
You're working so goddamn hard to make people feel like shit.
It makes me feel really mad at myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any better. Still mad, though. Still mad that still I did mad. That. Because you're right. Not only is that, like, not any time whatsoever, but just the concept of they don't know that we're having these discussions behind their back. They don't know that between my companion and I, what they say is not safe. That it goes to the district leaders and it goes to the zone leaders and it goes to the mission president. And then soon, all the missionaries in the entire state, in the entire mission, know this person's business, knows this person's sins and transgressions.
It's wild.
What? And I never, ever hesitated. I never hesitated.
It's like sold to you
tell.
As like, it's a necessary part of the
process.
Because
I was like, well, they're. Yes. I'm like, well, they're all going to know. They're all going to be able to help us get this person baptized. And that's what we want, right? That's our goal. And it also is almost like a protective thing of like, it's like when the cops interrogate you and like, they keep kind of like pushing you until you confess kind of thing. It's like, well, I don't want that. So like, I'm going to spill everything I know about this person. And it's not going to be my fault that they're not on date for baptism. I'm just going to tell you that they have X, Y, and Z as issues. And that even though we've done A, B, and C, they still haven't figured it out. So that's not on me as this, you know, God-fearing missionary. I wish I had understood consent, and I wish I had understood privacy like I do now, because I would have never been okay telling these people who don't know my investigators' private, intimate details of their spiritual journey, and then coming back with a plan clearly made to manipulate them into doing what I want so they get baptized on the day that I want them to get baptized on.
Right. I don't think before I was a missionary, I understood how much like planning went into it. Right. Because I think investigators feel like, oh, the missionaries are going to come on Thursday. And in their mind, they're just living their life. And then Thursday comes and the missionaries show up. And they don't realize that every day before then, the missionaries are like, studying together, going to district meeting, going to zone conferences, maybe even emailing their mission president, being like, hey, do you have any advice for this investigator? Praying constantly every day, you know, and then
telling your family, asking them to pray.
And then
and
the
fast.
Morning, you know, of when you're planning, you're like, hey, we're going to share this scripture, then this scripture. They're going to read this. I'm going to read this. We're going to ask this question. Like you plan it out. You plan it out like you would plan anything that you're going to teach, right? But I don't think that that is perceivable by the investigators. I think that they are like, oh, well, these people just really love me and they're just showing up. And maybe their missionaries are like, hey, you know, we thought we could read these scriptures that they would answer your questions that you have. But even then, it's not really revealing like why we chose these scriptures, right? Or like, you know, the order we're going to read them in. I think about like a lot of times when you teach the great apostasy, you go through, like, you read about all the scriptures about prophets, which you really kind of do have to like pluck out of the Old Testament. Like it's not chocked full, but when you present it as we're going to read this scripture from Amos and this scripture from this, you pull out all the ones, you're like, these are the scriptures about prophets. See how it makes sense now? And they're like, oh yeah, I do see how that makes sense, but it doesn't.
Anything out of context can be taken however
It's meant to lead them to the conclusions that you need them to get to. And I think when you're a missionary, you're like, your sense of morality is askew because you are built up by the church as like what you're doing is so important. Like you are a lot of people like talk about how they're like, well, if you die as a missionary, you die like the most righteous, you know, you're ever going to be. You're never going to be more righteous than when you're a missionary. And yep. that's what they tell you. And then they also tell you, like, okay, we're going to do these, like, sort of manipulative, sort of sketchy, like, weird vibes. And even I had, an iPad on my mission, and we had to document, like, our investigators and stuff.
That's Winston.
We did document, like,
he's so
who
big.
We met with and what we talked about. And we had a guide, like a book, basically, like not a thick book, like a magazine size almost, like, you know, maybe 20 pages book of like legally things you can and can't document in this app, like in the Area Book app. Because legally, you can't keep track of someone else's medical history, right? Like that's, you can't, the church isn't allowed to do that. So you would put in there, you know, this person has health concerns, but you couldn't put like this person has diabetes, right? Like it had examples of what you can and cannot put in the Area Book. You know, like this person has concerns about the law of chastity, but you can't put this person is living with their girlfriend and they're not married, you know, whatever. So like we had all these rules. So even then it felt like, Dang. Oh no, like the church cares about what is right and wrong. Like the church cares about morals because they gave us this whole book and they're like, drilling into us, like how to document things in a moral and an ethical and appropriate way. But it's literally just like the bare minimum of like legal, legal standards.
It's so if anyone were to ever find out that their personal information was now mm-hmm. in a cloud that the church had access to, they would be sued up the fucking wazoo. Yeah. And that's what they do to cover their yep. asses.
Yeah.
That's it. They're just there to cover their ass. Which is why everything that came out in the AP about Mormon sexual abuse being covered up with the hotline, which I agree, definitely requires, like, an entire fucking episode. But, like, stuff like that, like, they do it because they're just trying to, like, cover all of their bases. It's not out of love. It's not out of moral obligation. It's none of that. And it's really upsetting for a church that claims to be of God.
God's only one and true church
upon the face yeah. of the earth.
Yeah, and it's...
Yep. Not there to give a fuck about anybody else and their personal circumstance, only their legal protection. So whatever look that they want to put on to the world, whatever perception they want to give mm-hmm. is never tarnished.
Yeah. And I knew a family on my mission that, you know, they moved to my mission and I won't say where they're from or like share anything, but you know, they had a situation where one of their children was a victim of something that happened at church. They moved from far away, like they moved states. And so they were like, you know, attending this ward and they, the parents, like they would talk to us, like when we go visit them about how traumatizing it was for their child, how difficult it was for them to get their child to go to church after this thing happened to them at church. And they were great parents. You know what I mean? Like they weren't like, oh, it's so frustrating. He won't go to church.
Well, pick up and move.
They were
and
just like, oh, like, we just don't know what to do. Like, we've tried this and this, and it's just really hard. And we're like, yeah. And as missionaries, we're like, we don't fucking know what to do. Because that, they don't treat, like, there's no book on that. There's no, like, you know, because they don't care.
It's
a drop in a bucket of all these things that the church has to manage and juggle. And if they can just, like, push it down, cover it up, you even if that one family is impacted, even if that one ward is impacted, you know, it's like we have to keep, everybody else has to keep moving in the right direction, right? It's like the pioneers, like you bury your dead where they fall and you keep moving. Like, because if you stop and you like really assess yes. the situation, it's like, oh shit, like what the fuck are we doing in the middle of Nebraska in January? like, yeah, exactly.
Without shoes and food.
Yeah.
And shelter.
Yeah, like if
what
you
are
had
we
a
doing?
Moment of what the fuck am I doing? Like, trying to get my kid to go back to this place that harmed him. If you have that moment, it's like everything crumbles around you. So, like for the church, and not even in cases that are that serious, but I think anytime someone is like offended, quote unquote, I have thoughts on that. We'll have to do an episode on that because I got this email from my admission president, who's now just like a recurring character on this podcast, but like,
oh my God,
about
he really
like,
is though.
Being offended, right? Is it's the immediate response is like, hey, like I know that that was hard. I know that that felt this way, but like, you know, we got to keep moving. Like we gotta keep going. And that's like the counsel you get from like your bishop or like your SIG president, right? It's not just like random people in your ward. It's like, that's the official guidance from the church is like, I understand this happened and it was upsetting. And like, we can, maybe we'll like pray together, study something together, like sort of remedy it, you know, in some counseling. But at the end of the day, it's like the quiz that you take in the teen magazine, like it all comes back to like, you just got to deal with it. You just got to keep moving.
That actually reminds me of something that happened a couple months ago that really threw me for a fucking loop that I was not expecting. And without doing, you know, without giving too much information, I got two messages on Facebook. One was from someone in an area that I had known. Another was from someone I didn't know. Clicked the message of the person I knew. And this person said, hey, I'm sending a friend your way because there are some things that they experienced with one of the members. And I remember you telling me something kind of weird while you were on your mission. And now that you're out, I was thinking maybe you guys could, you know, kind of talk and see if you can help each other kind of like feel good about the situation. Anyway, so I open up the message from the person that I don't know, and they begin to explain to me a situation where a member of the area I was in was intentionally inappropriate, flirting, borderline sexual harassment. She's a massage therapist. He did things that were not appropriate. When his wife asked this person to come massage him, I was just like mind fucking blown. Because in retrospect, when this person moved out of the area, not only did they move out of the area, they quickly moved out of the state, just like drop and left. And they came to Utah. And this was around the time that I had became a massage therapist. And the wife of this man was trying to pay me to come down to their home and massage them. And I also learned through the conversation with this person that the reason they abruptly left Wisconsin and moved to Utah was because there was a threat to his medical license. He was a doctor in the area. And he was doing inappropriate things with people in a professional setting and inappropriate things with people I, as a missionary, were bringing mm-hmm. into their home to fellowship. And I just remember, like, reading these messages from this person, like, kind of, like, conversating back and forth about everything that they had gone through. And then I went back, and I was talking to the person that I had known in the area, and they were like, this is why we could never get baptized.
Right.
Because of the way this person yeah. was. Then, of course, they learned a ton of stuff about the church, and after that, it was all over. But it was just, like, the very foundation of the church is coercive, manipulative,
dismissive of
offensive,
real problems.
Dismissive of real issues. Real fucking problems. And I am now watching this person move from state to state to state to practice a new, you know, practice somewhere else. That's been this blessed opportunity. But what I think is happening is he is running away from getting caught doing what
wild.
He's doing. And I don't know. I'm pissed. Feel fire all the fucking way, man.
Wow. It's so funny because we're like, what are we going to talk about? But there's always something.
All right, folks. We have been on a rant for quite a while now, a little over an hour. So we're going to leave it right here where we're at. We're going to pick it up next time. Please like, follow, subscribe, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, literally everywhere. Go on to Exmo Candles, buy yourself a Loud Laughter candle or any of the other content creator candles. They're seriously all incredible. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We miss you. We promise we are going back to a regular schedule now.
We mean it
this time. Unlike the Mormon Church, we will provide.
And if we don't, we will apologize.
We will do what we say. Yes, and if we don't, if we fail, we will apologize and own up to that because
exactly.
We aren't little bitches.
That's our motto.
I'm in a mood, man. I am in a mood. All right. That's our motto. We ain't little bitches.
We're going to have to write a new song.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Writing a song. New theme song.
We're not little bitches. Love that.
Anyway, we love you. Drink your water. Put on your sunscreen. Get good sleep.
Take care of yourself. Okay, we love you.
Anyway, Bye. We love you. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing.
I could wring a neck right
now. The other thing that's strange.
Joseph Smith, where are you at? Come here.
You said that like you have a cat named Joseph
Smith. Did I lose? Oh, nope. I thought I lost an eyelash. And don't get baptized.
At least not into Mormonism.
If you didn't get baptized while we were gone, please don't get baptized. Yeah, not into Mormonism.
Somewhere else could be a really good time.
Just
I would tell you if you were just... It's like stuck to your cheek.
Just waving hello.
Where are you? Are you in the closet? Where'd you go? Are you under the bed?
Well, when we get a new cat, I'm going to name him Joseph so I can bitch at him when I'm mad and call him Joseph Smith.
Oh, God. I don't remember what I was going to say. That's funny. What are we talking about?
I've heard there are some other cults that do a lot more fun stuff than what the Mormon Church does.
So maybe
does,
like, so. Try them all out.
Find yourself a fun cult. Yeah, try them out on for size. You know, you only... YOLO, you only live once,
you can
okay?
Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?